CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Good morning and welcome to CityTalk's Business with Frank McKenna. My name's Roger Jonas and I'm the events manager for Downtown in Business, the independent private sector business club with attitude. I've got two guests joining me in the studio, both with a tenuous link to each other in the realm of the creative industry. From Ubiquity, PR, head of agency Joel Jellin, and Danny Thompson, managing director of Prominent Events. Good morning, all.
Morning.
Now, prior to working with Frank and the team at Downtown, I've spent most of my working life in and around the professional theatre industry, occasionally treading the boards, but more so in the technical and management side. Over the years, I've watched the industry change quite dramatically. Financial cutbacks meant that I had to broaden my scope of work and engage more in a wider range of hospitality-based events, taking on a role that covered not just the creative side, but also finance, marketing, public relations, and stage management in a very diverse assortment of events other than the theatre. So first of all, this morning, I want to talk about the business of hospitality and looking at what it takes to put on a good event. So, Danny, let's come to you first. You run an events company. Yep. Do you actually specialise in one particular style of event? Tell us a bit more about Prominent Events.
No, well, Prominent Events was mainly set up to take the stress away from the client who was actually putting the event on. So what we tried to do was offer the client a complete package. So if someone wants to put an event on, we can put any event on. And we not only do we actually manage the event side of things, we actually put the production side of it on.
So it's a one-stop shop, in a sense.
It's basically a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of we found that our clients wanted. And with events, with the production side of things, we can do facilitate any event because every event pretty much has your core technical side and your core management side. And although you can have different styles of events, I mean, we do stuff like from corporate dinners to private parties to, you know, whatever type of event you like. Mm-hmm. It's just that wide scope of events.
So do you get involved in the creative side as well as just providing all the technical garb and...
Yeah, well, that I think the creative side more comes into it in what I see is like private parties because everyone sort of has their own taste. And that's where your creative side really sort of comes out. And we might do sort of a Western party for someone that wants to throw a massive sort of Western party. We've done carnival parties, and then we'll do like 50th parties where you have to throw everything back into the 60s. But it seems as though people are more wanting to really sort of express themselves in private parties, and especially businesses as well, doing corporate events. They want to express what their business is all about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at Downtown, I think you'll be aware of this, Joel, the kind of events that we organise. And sometimes, you know, we do adopt a theme, which I think is quite important because, you know, year in, year out, you've got to keep the light under the pan going, haven't you? It's got to be exciting.
Well, that's it. And everyone's trying to outdo each other at the moment as well.
Yeah. So demands are increased, aren't they? Yeah. So your creativity has you know, you've really tested, I suppose. I mean, we at Downtown, you know, we've just held our Liverpool Business Awards. Now, we go to every year, we've been to the Palm House, which is a fantastic venue in the city. Coming up, we've got Liverpool in November. Now, that is again a big awards dinner, 400 people in the Crown Plaza. How do you rate the sort of city venues that we have in terms of events?
I think there are quite a lot of venues that sort of change. I think the city needs a few more themed venues. I mean, although you have like the Palm House and you have the other one that's just come up in Stanley Park,
Isle of Gladstone. Yeah.
And they're fantastic venues, different venues, so you get that outdoor feel. I feel as though a lot of the function suites, though, you know, that are available throughout the city centre are quite sort of similar. And that's where, you know, events companies like ourselves really sort of have to change things up, and we have to bring in a lot of a lot of kit to change that venue and make it make it feel a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've got the new arena. I don't know if you've done any work at the arena.
I
mean, what a fantastic space. And I don't just mean the arena. There's the BT Convention Centre next to. People do get confused with the two. I've just spent the best part of July at the Summer Pops with some amazing events. You know, I mean, when you consider the scale of what they have to go through. I mean, every night there's a different event on. Every night there's a different staging, different lighting. So technically, there's so much involved. And again, you know, do you find that when you're working with a client, that they have got specific needs and quite often might outweigh what you can deliver?
Yeah, I think, us as a company, you're not going to be able to facilitate everything that every single client wants, because everybody's so different and what they want could be so much different from someone else. But there's always an extent to where you can get them, and then you can bring in, that's when you need to start subbing out and bring in a few people in from other companies, and then.
But isn't it right to? I mean, nobody can expect you to provide two lions at a dinner that are going to walk around, on leads. So I suppose having to work with different agencies can only add to that. I mean, you can be as one stop shop as I suppose you as much as you want. But I think ultimately, if you've got these demanding clients who've got great ideas and, might I add, the budget to match it, because these things I know don't come cheap, you know. I think it's always important that you work with outside agencies. We again at Downtown, we work with a number of different groups who all have their input into the success of our events. And I think by that you're spreading the load a bit. You're not taking the entire responsibility yourself. We've got a cracking team that we work with at Downtown, but there are certain things that we just can't deliver. And I think we rely very heavily on the technical knowledge and the expertise of individuals who might know a particular venue. Yeah. It's to me, I think you're right when you were talking about that we haven't got enough top venues in the city.
Yeah.
They're all very safe. The majority are very, very safe. And I think that's probably a lot to do with planning and architecture.
Yeah. I mean, you do, obviously, as you said before, you have got the likes of the Echo Arena, but the Echo Arena, I think, stands for itself.
Mm.
I mean, if you want to put on the best event in the city, that's where you're going to go.
Mm.
But I think that's a whole, the arena is a whole different ball game. Mm. If you're putting on a smaller corporate dinner, apart from the likes of your sort of St. George's Hall, you're going to go to like one of the hotels, and I think that the actual facilities there are quite similar to each other. They don't offer anything that's like a little bit different.
But again, with St. George's Hall, I mean, one of the most stunning interiors in the city, recently went through a massive refurbishment with a massive price tag on it. But again, I think personally, and again, this is down to design and architecture, I think they missed a trick, because one of the criticisms...
The sound.
Is the sound. Yeah, I didn't even need to tell you.
You're
telepathic.
I think the design for the likes of St. George's Hall and a lot of these older buildings is for the acoustic, and that's for the sound to travel without having the aid of a microphone. But since like technology's moved on so much, obviously that facility's not needed anymore, and it just becomes an absolute nightmare to work.
But at the
with.
Same time, you say technology's moved on to that extent, and I mean, there's very little that you can't do with sound now. But again, for you to get the balance right in the likes of St. George's Hall and a lot of other buildings, I'm not just picking on St. George's Hall,
but
a lot of other buildings where there is a boom, there is an echo and a delay. To actually achieve that perfect balance in sound costs a lot of money, because you've got to get the kit in.
You've got to get the right kit.
And that's important. I mean, do you carry that kind of kit, or would you bring that in? Or
yeah, I mean, well, we carry that kind of kit, but I think there's, in that particular room, I mean, I know we're talking about St. George's Hall, but different rooms will require a different style of kit. And I know there is times where we've been into certain buildings and we went, our kit isn't the best that is on offer for this type of room, and I'm sure that any company would rather bring in the right kit so that their company obviously looks, you know, it looks good on their behalf of putting that the right stuff in.
I mean, I think that's really important to me when I'm organising an event and engaging with an events company, is the quality of sound.
Yeah.
I've been to one of my problems is I, you know, get invited. I mean, Joel, you go to an awful lot of events in the city. And I find that I don't go there to enjoy the event as such. I go there to judge and compare. And one thing that gets my goat is the quality of sound. And I think it fails on so many levels if you don't get decent kit. Joel, you have been involved recently with Brouhaha. I know you've done a lot of PR. Can you just explain a little bit about Brouhaha? Because I want to sort of... Here's the tenuous link, if you like. Let's explore some of the venues that Brouhaha use.
I suppose the tenuous link between what we do, between marketing and PR, the join is that we do showcases as opposed to big events. Mm. If we were going to do an event for 500 people plus, we wouldn't get involved. Being really brutally honest, we couldn't be bothered with all the technicality and detail involved. Brouhaha is a festival that was invented 21 years ago. In Liverpool right now, it's at its height, and it's all about engaging different cultures in Liverpool. If you are new to the city and you wandered around Liverpool city centre, you might think it's predominantly a white city with not too many backgrounds to it, apart from, of course, being in August when lots of tourists are here. You get the wrong idea. You can, if you look closely enough, see different cultures in people's faces. But if you go to the likes of Liverpool 8 and other areas, predominantly in the south of the city, you'll start to see a mix of different cultures. Mm. What Brouhaha are trying to do is spread the diversity that exists in a small vacuum in the city and spread it around. So that, if you like, one of Liverpool's most famous and prized treasures, Liverpool Football Club, it reflects the multicultural aspects of Liverpool Football Club.
Joel, I absolutely hate you. I hate you. I'd seriously vowed this morning that we wouldn't talk football. It would never be mentioned. And you've gone and... Every week, Frank McKenna somehow gets football into... And I'm almost tempted to say, cut, let's start again. But you've done it now, so carry on.
I'll try not to mention it again.
That's all right.
But the only time the majority of people, and a comment was passed to me at Africa Oye recently in Sefton Park, that people recognise that we are a multicultural city, is either at Africa Oye in June, at Brouhaha in July, or at the Asda on Smithdown Road on a Friday night. So it's important that Brouhaha stamps its mark on the city and says the right things about Liverpool, that it is increasingly a cosmopolitan place to come and live, work and play. It's done so well that it's now importing its own brand of carnival to Europe. It's become the second biggest carnival in the UK behind Notting Hill. Next week, I'm going to Turkey. Yeah, next week, I'm going to Turkey, Istanbul, which, sorry, there's a link between Liverpool Football Club and Istanbul, but I'll leave it there, to witness Brouhaha's input into the production of a European Capital of Culture carnival for Istanbul. So it's made great strides from when it started and when it was considered just as a very small community-based carnival, to now taking in corporate Liverpool as well as community Liverpool and going on to the European stage.
As a festival, as an event, is it a celebration of culture then?
Yeah, it's a celebration of diversity and everything that people want to experience in a big city. Liverpool's the fourth major city now in the UK, according to various different indices, whether it's retail or others.
Football.
Maybe. It's not fourth in football. It's probably second still, isn't it? It's such a huge city in many people's eyes. Everybody has got an opinion about this city, good, bad or otherwise, and far more to the good now since the Capital of Culture celebration in 2008. So it's really important to take the carnival and use it as another platform to celebrate Liverpool.
You mentioned that before Sefton Park. I mean, it's a beautiful park, isn't it? It's fantastic. I don't live too far from there. And I spend a lot of time in Sefton Park. And again, they've just gone under a massive refurb. They hold some spectacular events in the park as well. Danny, open air events, a nightmare?
Can be if the weather's poor. Obviously, it's for the likes of the Brouhaha Festival. It's you know, it's an event. It's an open event. So if it starts to rain or you know it's poor weather, your turnout's not going to be exactly what you thought.
And we don't get much rain in this country, do we?
You know, last year at the Brouhaha Festival, we had a good day, if I remember rightly, and it was it was a fantastic turnout. It really was.
What sort of technical problems might you come across?
Well, on a technical problem, everything sort of from our point of view is we always prepare for that worst.
Big umbrellas.
Yeah, well, it's mainly sort of for sound desks and things like that. Obviously, it's going to be canopied stages. Will you know? You'll have the artists will be shielded and stuff like that. Obviously, with dealing with a lot of power when you're talking with the lights and your sound systems and things like that. So it does deal with a lot of problems. The setup on the likes of the Brouhaha, with it being on grass, you might have a few problems with actually setting the stage up and making sure you don't set it somewhere where your stage is going to start sinking. And then you're dealing with a health and safety point of view. And you know, that is the problem. They're your problems, I think, mainly with an outdoor event is your weather.
I think what we're doing here is we're kind of painting a picture of what it takes to put on any event. And I think quite a lot of people, they tend to see our industry, if you like, as being quite glamorous. Can we try and dispel that myth now? Because it's far from being glamorous, I think. You know, you look at it, you know, you're first in, you're last out.
Yeah.
You're stressed throughout the event itself. All the preparation that you've done is put into action the minute the first person walks through the door. And that's when you're on guard, isn't it? So this whole idea of glamour, and some people, you know, quite often say to me, oh, you must love your job. And yet I do. I absolutely love my job. There are certain elements of it that I would like to be stress-free, but it's never going to happen. So let's get over this perception that organising events is actually glamorous. As I say, you want the night to be seamless, or you want the event to be seamless, but the amount of work and coordination that goes into the preparation can be phenomenal. And an event, you know, I tell you a story. Actually, a friend of mine who I absolutely hate now for what he's done. We were talking before about comparing and judging. I have a friend, Kevin McMahon. I don't know if you know him, Joel, from Naked Poets, a film production company. Said to me a while ago, one of my favourite TV programmes is Top Gear. And I watch it because I can relax, I can sit back, I can have a good laugh, and, you know, learn a little bit about cars and things. But he said to me, oh, Roger, he said, he talks like that, oh, Roger, like Frankie Howard. He said, next time you watch it, have a look at the production. You know, take into account the preparation that's gone into it, the big flyovers that they do, the stunts that they do. You know, the camera angles and they shoot. And now I can't watch Top Gear without sort of digging deeper into how they do it, looking at the technicalities of it. So it's kind of spoilt it for me in some ways. I'll never forgive him. Well, that's probably a bit rich, but, he owes me at least half a dozen pints. And again, you know, let's touch on the amount of pre-preparation that goes into an event so that when the client arrives and the guests arrive, that what they're seeing is actually a seamless event from start to finish. I mean, Danny, what kind of blueprint do you work to? Do you have some specific tick box that you deal with?
Yeah, I mean, corporate dinners and private parties are pretty much sort of the same preparation scale, if you like. We like to look at 6 months for things to run really, you know, nicely. You can have a good couple of meetings with the client, you know, come back to them with different plans, go back, rework them, ask them again. That's when you go back, work up your costs, how much it's going to cost the client, and then they can come back and they can scratch things off. And that takes a while. And then you get things into motion. Now, a lot of people that are putting events on don't sort of realise the time scale of these things. And then they come to you and say, I've got an event in 4 weeks. And that's when the pressure's really on. And you're dealing with like these massive dinners and things that, you know, you're talking 500 people. And they come to you and say, right, well, we need, you know, your sound systems, your lighting systems, you know, all the visual work done. But it's not just, for instance, with visual, when you're going down the route of visuals, it's not just putting your projection screens up and away
the visuals
go.
Have got to be
you've
created.
You've actually got to create the visuals. Yeah, so you've got to, you might have to go out and do a lot of filming, a lot of interviewing, and then you've got to take that back, edit it, show it to the client, make sure it all looks great. Yeah. Is that what they want? And then you might have to take it back to the lab again, start all over. And it's a long, long process. I mean, obviously, their main concern is selling the tickets for these events or making sure that people are going to turn up to the party. So they don't want to deal with that technical aspect. So while you're in the, you know, in the cupboards working your magic, trying to, you know, make this fantastic party that they want, their main worry is just wanting to sell these tickets. So
they want to get about their business and leave you to get on with the dirty work.
Can I just step in there, ask you a question. Is it really hard to recruit the right people to work for you because everyone in the queue thinks that it's a glamorous job and it's probably a lot easier than actually it really is?
Well, definitely. I mean, there's so many sorts of aspects as well to an event. So, you know, if one thing can go wrong, you don't get the one camera, you know, the right camera guy, that can seriously affect your whole event. And, you know, you if you don't get your right sound engineer, it won't sound right. If you don't get your lighting engineer, it won't look right. Mm. If you don't, you know, if you're not putting on your right stage, the stage is going to look dreadful. So there's a lot of things to go wrong if you don't have the right people in place, as you said. And, you know, people are looking at these events, as you said before, when you go to an event, you look at the event to pick out what each person's, you know, what each person's doing right or doing wrong, and it's very critical.
Vast majority of people who come to us are almost disappointed that they've actually got a right as part of their tasks in the job. They can't quite believe it. Whether that's because they've heard about PR from the beaches of Ibiza, where you can be a pretty PR boy or girl giving out flyers to get into Pasha or wherever, or they've just got it from Max Clifford or whatever their perception is of it, is usually completely different. Which does make it easier in a way to sift out the CVs, as in the good ones from the bad ones. But I think both our industries are tarnished with misconceived ideas. Yeah,
charlatans.
I
come
wouldn't
on,
say that word.
I will. I think, you know, again, I walk through town in Liverpool. I walk through town in Manchester. I walk through town in Ibiza occasionally, and I'm handed one of these leaflets. Come to our club, and then all of a sudden, as you say, these people are PR consultants, or they're handing bloody leaflets out, for God's sake. And I think you've obviously got the experience, Danny. Yeah. You've definitely got the experience and the age to go with it, Joel. And
bless
so
you,
have
yeah.
I. So have I. Wouldn't. I mean, I think you know, experience is important, and identifying and defining the true role. We are after the break. We're going to come on to you, Joel, a little bit more and talk about definitions of PR and marketing. And there's a few questions and a few. Solutions that I need to find, because I'm pretty uncertain about some elements of PR and marketing, and I hope we can answer those later on. But for now, we're going to go to a break, and we'll be back just after this.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna, City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to City Talk Business with Frank McKenna, who, as you know, is not with us today. I'm joined in the studio by head of agency Joel Jellin from Ubiquity PR and the Managing Director of Prominent Events, Danny Thompson, and they've vowed during the break that football will never be mentioned again today. We've been talking about events, we've been talking about event management and the quality and the technicalities of it. I hope we've dispelled the myths that event management is glamorous. It can be, but not all the time. I want to have a look now at sort of PR and marketing, because again, I can only relate to what we do at Downtown. A lot of our events have got a media angle attached. We use them as a PR exercise. We're a membership organization, for God's sake. Joel Jellin, Ubiquity. Ubiquity is about getting brand recognition for your company or organization. That's what it says on your website. Mm-hmm. delve a little bit deeper, Joel, if you would. I know you touched on a few elements, but just go a little bit further about Ubiquity.
Yeah, well, it came up with a name because people who start a brand, if they're thinking about the business and the end game, they need that brand to be everywhere or, from a media perspective, in an indefinite number of places at once. So that's the reason behind the name. It's not about us being everywhere. It's always about the client. Our industry's changed out of all recognition over the years. It's still a bit of a misnomer, the actual word PR, to many people. But it means two things, really. One, visibility in media, print, broadcast and online, and using lots of new techniques that manipulate the brand online. And secondly, making introductions for that brand to its target markets. If you think of it as nothing else but that, don't pay any attention to Max Clifford keeping people out of newspapers. That's not about visibility, that's invisibility. Mm. Just think about those two core things, visibility and introductions, and there you have what the art of PR, or the dark arts, as it's known, is of PR. That's what it's about. What we do is we take either existing brands with a momentum and a campaign already in place and give it heightened momentum, or we take a brand that's just started and we elevate it so that they become, in business terms and in celebrity terms, a business celebrity in their own right. So if you think about a particular sector, that brand needs to become synonymous with a particular sector in people's eyes over, say, usually a six-month minimum period. Mm. Anything less than that is unrealistic. Anything more than that,
unrealistic to achieve or unrealistic to measure?
Unrealistic to achieve. The main issue that people have had with PR over the years, from a justification point of view and expenditure, has been about its nebulous nature. Mm. In other words, how can you measure it and see it as a tangible asset to your business? The good thing about PR over the last probably 2 years or so, in the fast-changing world of online marketing, Google ranking, etc., is that PR is now more tangible than ever before. There are particular indices that can be used to measure PR. For example, Google Alerts. For example, something called Backtype, which monitors comments online for your brand. I won't go into all the detail of it because it's boring to your listeners, but all I'm saying is, to any business that's thinking about investing in the dark arts of PR, it can now be measured. It's no longer something we ought to do because X and Y do it and it works for them, but we can't measure it. That's no longer the case. And if any PR company comes to a business and presents a proposal outlining a campaign but can't measure, I'm saying to that company, don't employ that company or even let them get past the pitch stage.
Because PR and marketing is very much about choice, isn't it? There's legislation that governs what you do with human resource. There's legislation that governs what you do with finance. But marketing and PR, there's no legislation to say that you have to engage with a PR professional to create awareness and heightened awareness for your business. It's down to choice. And obviously, the more savvy people will work with a PR company to gain the benefits.
I'm not sure it's about choice. I think there are a number of core aspects to running any business, and they include: get yourself a good accountant, get yourself a good lawyer, get yourself a good credit control manager, get yourself a very good backup team in terms of IT resources, and get yourself a marketing company. Whether you do it internally or whether you do it via outsourcing doesn't really matter. The reason is that you can't have a business plan without a marketing plan. Unless you believe in the Kevin Costner Field of Dreams scenario, build it and they will come. You have to have something that supports your growth plan. If you start as you mean to go on, and whenever you start a business, it's about the end game. How are you going to get from A to Z? You've got to use marketing to drive that. You've got to have a strategy in place. I think if banks had spent more time advising customers on having a marketing strategy and pointing them in the right direction of being able to get the advice, I wonder what the scenario would have been. So it's not about choice, I don't think. I think it's a core element of business.
I wonder if banks had a strategy, if that would have worked.
Well, corporate banks and marketing departments often are a very interesting insight for us into what goes on in the corporate world across the board. Talked about pretty girls and clipboards before, and without being sexist, it's also pretty boys. In the corporate world, often enough, in the marketing department, it's still filled by pretty boys and girls, young things, who don't necessarily have the nous, for example, to talk to media, defend the status of the company in a crisis. It usually comes from top down, and the CEO, the chairman, will issue a directive in saying, this is what needs to happen, and pretty PR boy or girl in marketing, often enough, has to then go and deliver that to media. That's where the breakdown comes. Great opportunity for communication professionals like us and Danny with his event company, simply because they can go in there and deliver something with expertise.
I think one thing that I always struggle with is the definition between PR and marketing. And I know, Joel, that you're now going to explain that to me. I know you've talked about PR, you've explained the route to PR. What is the simple distinction between PR and marketing?
Yeah, the answer is there isn't any. There used to be in the 90s, used to be a bit of a battle between the two associations at a national level saying, right, PR should be a separate subject from marketing. It's better that agencies set up and concentrate on these individual areas of expertise. Now it's a nonsense. And the reason why it's a nonsense is that it's all about the world of online and communication. All PR and marketing is one thing. It's communication. It's just how you do it. So if you want to think of marketing in really simplistic terms, think of it in terms of, say, promotion, advertising, events. If you want to then think about PR separately, if that's the way your mind works, think of it about such things as editorial, media relations. However, you've got to put the two together nowadays, simply because our world is dictated by a certain thought process. If we want to, as consumers, find out about something, what do? We go into Google and we put hairdressers in there. We're going to talk about hairspray afterwards. We put football in there, if we want to talk about that dreaded word, football. We put whatever we want in there to find out and seek what we're searching for. So the process used to start in PR with, you go to a client, you find out what the brand messages are, then you go out into the big wide world of media, in print and broadcast, and you deliver what the client wants people to hear. What people do now is, in this big wide world of consumerism, they start from the premise of, what am I searching for? So what the PR industry does, it joins with the marketing industry and says, I no longer need to craft the messages around what my client wants. I'll do that anyway. I need to craft messages around what people are searching for. So if your man or woman who gets up at 7 a.m, who's your consumer, gets up at 7 a.m, first thing they do is they look at their inbox in their phone. They check their text message. Second thing is they might look on Facebook. Third thing, they'll look at their email inbox. Fourth thing, they'll do a look at the Daily Post. Fifth thing, or even maybe first thing, listen to City Talk and see what's going on in the news there. They might listen to a podcast. They might get a letter in the post, which will open up. They might look at the TV. I've just listed 7 things. Yeah. So we know that somebody's searching for general news and features out there to hear, to look at, to listen to in the morning. Okay? So what I need to do is I need to find out exactly what activities a certain buyer is doing, and then send all the messages from my client to those marketing tools that people are using, because that's what they really are, they're marketing tools, to enable that customer to read about my client. Okay. And the way I do that is I use keywords that they type into Google. So I then have got to, before I finish off writing that media release, if you're still with me, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before I finish writing that media release, I've got to go into Google. I've got to go into Google Ad Planner. I've got to go to Google Insights for Search, and I will find on there the keywords that people use to search for the product or service that my client offers. I then put those words into the messages within this media release. I then send it out to those 7 or 8 different mediums. And that's how I'm maximizing the opportunity of the consumer noticing my client's brand. So you can't talk about PR and marketing anymore in isolation. It's a nonsense. They're hand in hand. It's just about communication. That's your answer.
You've just said something there. We're talking about brand recognition. You've just mentioned the word Google. Isn't that like we now call a vacuum cleaner, a Hoover? people automatically associate that doing their online search that you Google, but you can Bing and you can Ask Jeeves, can't you? So is it the success of Google that has brought that to the forefront in our psyche, and that's the first thing we think about?
Yes, Google dominates the market by 90%. It has 90% control of the market. Wow. Why do we just talk about Facebook in terms of social media contexts when you can talk about so many others? You know, Technorati, Tumblr, etc. These are all social media tools. LinkedIn's probably mentioned second most behind Facebook. It used to be music oriented, didn't it? What's the music social media that's just gone completely out of my head?
The iTunes. I don't know. You completely lost there.
Sunday morning here at 10 o'clock, and we've all gone completely flat.
I've been Googling all morning too.
Exactly, MySpace, or as my dad calls it, my Facebook and Spacebook that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So MySpace.
Senior
used
moment.
Used to be
there,
the call. Joel. Cheers. Used to be the most looked after search for social media. Now I can't even remember it. You know, there's new things coming on stream called Foursquare, which is to do with restaurants, which is straight out of San Francisco, which uses a GPRS tool to locate people and then sends a message into their inbox, into their swanky iPhone. So
you're talking about
people mention Google because it's got a massive share of the market that it's become a verb.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's strange. Websites. Danny, you have a website for prominent events. How important is that to you in your marketing initiatives in selling the company?
If someone types in sort of the words events, then you want your sort of company to pop up first in Google. In terms of the website, we tend to more use it as if someone asks about our company and you give your website address across, is for people to instantly look at that website and know exactly straight away what your company is about. And that's how we use our website, not mainly for sort of people to type in and find you first, but more for people to maybe have heard of you by word of mouth, is literally to go onto your website and for them to know that, you know, this is the company that I want to put on my event.
I remember a while ago, Joel advised us at Downtown to look and interact with social media, with Facebook, and all the others, which I won't go into because I've only just discovered Facebook myself. And actually, I think it's one of the most amazing initiatives. It's put me in touch with a lot of people that I really wanted to get in touch with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's put me in touch with some people I didn't want to get in touch with. But you can always delete them, I suppose. Again, Danny, do you use social media as part of your PR tool?
Definitely. I mean, any especially with these tools, the likes of Facebook and that, it's free. So it is, in a sense, free advertising. And it's fantastic if you have, like, the right, the right people that know how to get into these social networking sites and things like that, and that really know how to exploit them. It's a great tool, and it's very, very quick to get to reach out to people. You can create a group, and you can instantaneously gather up thousands of people that, you know, will instantly see your company brand. And I think it's a fantastic tool for nothing.
It's incredible how quickly you can populate your list of friends. You know, obviously we've set on, from advice from Joel, a downtown Facebook site, and we go into it every day. We leave messages, we read messages. It's exactly what you were saying before. It's that routine now. And I've just recognised in myself something that Joel's just explained, my routine first thing in the morning. I get up at 6:30 every morning. I don't tend to get in work till about 9:30, but I've probably done about an hour and a half's work by the time I get there on my phone, because I can do it travelling into work. Well, I'm not driving into work. I stop occasionally. Sometimes I get the bus, so, you know, I use that time. And actually what it's done is, by using this social media, it's lengthened my day, and using technology has massively lengthened my day, because I can still work at 11 o'clock at night whilst I'm watching the television by picking up my iPhone. I think it's amazing. Where next? Where do we go next? That's my worry. Let's just briefly get back to this, because I'm fascinated by what you said about that there is very little difference between PR and marketing. How can you measure? I mean, if we've got listeners now thinking, well, you know, I've got some great marketing ideas to heighten the awareness of my company, to boost my profits. I've probably just given the game away there, but boost my profits. How do you measure a successful PR and marketing campaign?
Two things. One is number of introductions made to a brand, and number two is, as you mentioned, profits. There's some very simplistic ways of looking at it, and there are some campaigns that are easier to measure than others. For example, if we take Danny's scenario of events and then reel back to what I'm talking about on our scenario, we do showcases for a relatively small number of people, and we share the event with the client. In other words, all the infrastructure is already there. So, for example, we helped launch Habitat when they came to Liverpool. We helped launch Whistles when they came to Liverpool. They were a huge brand, obviously, in the UK, and they've got a big marketing team. So they don't need to completely outsource what they're doing. They wanted something in store, so everything's in place. They didn't know the local market, number one, and two, the local media. We're very well connected, Roger, as you know. Over the last 15 years, been fortunate enough to build up a very big database across corporate and lifestyle markets. We tapped into that. We used, for example, social media as a tool to recruit the attendees eventually at the event. And we justified our use of our time using Facebook and social media, other social media we use too, by saying we invited X and X number of people came. They looked at the tills at the end of the night, in view of the number of people came via us, able just to look and see where the money was spent, where income was derived from. Very, very simple example. There are other ways that are slightly more complicated in terms of media coverage, which I could or maybe I shouldn't get into you, but with you. But there are definitive ways, and I can run off a number of indices that I use for print and broadcast and then separately online, which show the difference we make to a brand. The fact is that the nature of our industry is such now that when you send an invoice at the end of the month, just like Danny when he sends an invoice, we have to show the objectives that have been met and the results that have been reached.
Danny, over to you, because one thing I kind of always have struggled with is measuring the success of an event that I've been involved with. And the reason I say that is because on the night, taking into account everything we've done before, the preparation, the coordination, on the night, you're so engaged with it, you're so involved with it. I don't think you can step back and take that view. How do you measure the success of one of your events?
I think it's always... The first thing that we'll look at is probably the look of the client's face when he first stepped through the door.
Yeah.
You can either tell whether they're happy with it or they're not. The second thing is whether that event becomes a talking point. So you might realise that the event has become a success a few weeks down the line when people are still talking about this event that was put on. I know for private parties, people are, you know, they still talk about this one particular party that they've been to, and they're like, you know, this was the most amazing party. He had this, he had that. This was going on. Same with like the corporate dinners. You know, they had this speaker, and it was, you know, they want to see the whole picture. They take it as a picture. They don't just say, you know, wow, yeah, so, you know, the visuals were great on that one, or the speaker was great on that one.
Do you think people are attracted by the celebrity thing still?
Yeah, I do think that's a core thing, is that whole, you know, any event, it's got to be such a body's going to be showing up or such a body's going to be speaking. And then it's that whole wow factor of with us is the events, is that wow factor of people. As soon as they step through that door, they know that at an event. Because you've probably been to a lot of events that you've been to in the past where you've just walked in and went, okay, it's a function suite. You've got a top table and you're going to have a dinner speaker.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, yeah, it was the same, but it was the same as every other event. What we try to create is that wow factor is when you went in and went, that was different. You know, yes, they had Steven Gerrard talking, but you know, wasn't that a great night? You know, the, you know, the actual design of how the, how, you know, seamless that night
was. Do you do the kind of parties where, you know, you do it in somebody's lavish big garden with a marquee in the back, and you spend 4 days putting little LEDs in the trees, and actually probably nobody ever looks at them, but it paints that whole picture. It's part of, you know, the red carpet and the trees all lit up. Nobody actually physically goes, "Ooh, look at the tree, look at the work that's gone into that," not realising you've been up in a cat's cradle for the 4 days wiring P-bulbs into things.
It's those little things, though.
Attention to detail.
Yeah, that really sort of make people go, wow. I mean, you'll probably know about it in your marketing sense of, like, although, you know, people mightn't sort of really pick up and go, you know, oh, wow, you know, there's the City Talk logo again. But if them little bits are everywhere, then you really do see the big picture in the end. It is them fine details that, you know, people, although they won't talk about them, they really will notice.
I think some of the stuff that prominent events do taps into people's cognitive thought process, which is, I think, ultimately what you're saying in terms of people, you know, they're digesting a brand, aren't they, and all the values of it. But to be fair to Danny and his team, they're all probably working in conjunction with some kind of campaign anyway. So there may have been some publicity prior, which is pushing people, pointing people towards a website. And what that event does is give people heightened awareness around that campaign, if it is a campaign or a particular project. And then they can easily measure through Google Analytics, which I didn't mention earlier, which I want to speak about really briefly, if I can. It all adds up in terms of the power of creating the event, the brand awareness that's generated from it, and ultimately the income that can be generated too. I wanted to mention Google Analytics because I probably did your listeners a disservice, and us too. The whole point of mentioning PR and marketing before and the join is that I talked about that verb, didn't I? Google, you Google something. Our job is to get people to engage with a brand and to get engaging with a brand online. So we make sure that a website, for example, that's been designed maybe by another company or designed via a contact that we chose, has lead generation on there. It has data gathering opportunities. In other words, there's opportunities in there to really engage with the client once the media coverage has been generated in well, print, broadcast, online, wherever it's actually been generated. So we can measure through Google Analytics how many people have visited the website, how many people have purchased a product or service. It's all there. It's one of the absolute key tools by which we're judged. And more now, as an industry, we can be judged in almost a scientific way rather than some sort of qualitative, nebulous style that used to happen.
A qualitative, nebulous style, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need.
I need a cup of coffee.
I need a.
Is this Radio 4 or City Talk FM? Sorry about that.
I think something a marketing initiative and an event combined too. And we were going to have Jane Lloyd from the Empire Theatre. I've known Jane for many years and invited along. Sadly, she couldn't be with us this morning because I wanted to talk about Hairspray. Obviously, my love of theatre and Scouser's love of the musical theatre. Hairspray kicks off at the Empire Theatre on the 17th of August and runs until the 4th of September. Now, I went to see, and this is why I want to bring this in, I went to the media launch of Hairspray, and the worst thing ever happened. The power down. Everything went off. The cast had come up from their rehearsal space in London. Mickey Stark, who plays Edna Turnblad, and Les Dennis, who plays Wilbur Turnblad, were there, and it was, you know, it was an epic event, and boom, everything went, the sound went, the microphones went. It could have been a disaster, but you know what? It just showed how professional people are, because the technicians weren't fazed. They went about trying to get it sorted. Sadly, they couldn't, which was it was a shame. But the professionalism of the performers was unbelievable. It was almost like a psychic link where they all just carried on without any guidance. It was amazing to watch. And I tell you what, they got a standing ovation. It was incredible. That's the kind of thing that you're up against. There were probably about 60 people, and these were the press. Oh, my God, yeah. The press. the media, who can go away and tell this awful story about how the Hairspray media launch went badly wrong. But do you know what? I bet none of them did, because people were so impressed by the skill of the technicians, you know, by the skill of the performers and the artists. And, you know, hats off to the whole team.
I think it's that whole thing as well of don't panic, because I know, the guys here that work in, you know, in radio, yeah. is that if you start to panic in the likes of an event, you can't think straight. In anything that you do, you just won't think straight if you start to panic.
And it probably takes twice as long if you do panic.
Exactly, and these are the likes of the technicians and, you know, the actors. They probably had something along them lines before, and they are trained in it where it's, you know, let's deal with it.
But that comes exactly back to what you were saying before about getting found out. You get found out so quickly.
That's it. It's what separates.
If you can carry a clipboard around and be as efficient as the next man, but actually, you don't know your stuff, which is obviously the biggest benefit in bringing on board a professional team who've got a track record, who've got experience, who've got the knowledge, and who can take the job away from you, so that you can get on with your business, what you know about.
Definitely.
I think that's really, really important.
Can I just say there that knowing how I know journalists think and work, they were probably slightly disappointed by virtue of the fact that none of the actors threw a hissy fit, because that would have been great copy for them. They were probably a little bit disappointed, Roger.
Oh, well, and how easy would that have been? I mean, we all know, as I say, I spent 20 years working in professional theatres, and I've seen some hissy fits. I've had bacon and lettuce tomatoes thrown at me across the green room. That's a hissy fit. And you know, I can certainly imagine that certain people up on that stage would have. I was just totally bowled over by the professionalism. And, I take your point, it probably would have been a far better story. To you're the media man, Joel. You know, it possibly would have been a better story if somebody had kicked off.
Can I just add as well that for those who know me really well, to have bacon thrown at me would have crushed me. So fair play, Roger.
Moving swiftly on, I think there, Joel. Hairspray, 17th of August to the 4th of September. It is a fantastic cast. As I said before, Michael Stark, who's probably known. Better for now. It's just gone completely. The Royal Hospital, and also for Brookside, and Les Dennis, who's just known. You know, two big, massive TV personalities, both Scousers. Fantastic event. Hairspray at the Empire Theatre. Well, sadly, that brings us to the end. I'd like to say a big thank you to my two guests, Danny Thompson and to Joel Jelen, and. If you are listening this morning, which I've no doubt you will, I hope you get back from London safely with your hairpiece intact, and I shall see you tomorrow in the office. Until then, thanks for listening.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.